නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. Yesterday during the English Dhamma discussion, actually we had a little problem related to how one would know the complete eradication of taints, complete eradication of asavas. So I was able to do a little bit of reading on that, and I found one sutta Buddha talking about it. And actually, Most Venerable Katukulunda Nyanananda Thero has referred this sutta. So I thought of we'll conduct this sutta, which not only covers the eradication of asavas, but it talks about few thing else, few other things as well. So we'll take that sutta, which is available in the Anguttara Nikaya Chatukka Nipata. Anguttara Nikaya, where in the section where four items, four matters are discussed, it is called Sacchikaraniya Sutta. Sacchikaraniya Sutta. And now in this sutta, so Buddha talks about four items, four matters where those are to be realized. Chattaro me bhikkave sacchikaraniya dhamma. Monks, there are four things to be realized. What for? Atthi bhikkave dhamma kayena sacchikaraniya. There are things to be realized by the body. Atthi bhikkave dhamma satiya sacchikaraniya. There are things to be realized by memory. Atthi bhikkave dhamma chakkhuna sacchikaraniya. There are things to be realized by the eye. Atthi bhikkave dhamma paññāya sacchikaraniya. There are things to be realized by wisdom. So there are four areas here Buddha wants to explain, and one is to be realized by the body, other by the mind, by the memory, the other by the eye, the other one by the wisdom. And then he is going on to one by one. Kathame bhikkave dhamma kayena sacchikaraniya. So what are the things to be realized by the body? Atta vimokkha. Bhikkave kayena sacchikaraniya. The eight emancipations, monks, are to be realized by the body. So what are the eight emancipations? So they are explained in another sutta, in Anguttara Nikaya Attaka Nipata, called Vimokkha Sutta, talking about the eight emancipations. So these are actually temporary release of the mind, temporary, we can say, freedom of the mind. They are not actually permanent freedoms. They are also not the sort of realization of the Nibbana, any attainments. Rather, these are, we can say, some jhanic attainments. But the interesting point is, unlike jhana, here one can have a complete boundless awareness of the mind. Say, typically, when we are absorbed to a particular object through a jhana, so my mind is absorbed to that, and so basically, it will be fixed onto that. Kind of a fixation is there onto a particular object. But here the point is, it becomes unlimited. So we'll see how it is happening. So the eight emancipations, they are explained as rupi rupani passati. So that means, so basically, they are using the khasinas to do this. So what this indicates is that in order to attain the jhana, he has used certain khasinas, and those khasinas can be taken from internally or externally. Say, for example, if you are practicing white khasina, so you can refer the skull. Typically, the skull has the white color. So you are recognizing the white color, revealing the white color from the skull, and then you are allowing the mind to again and again reflect that. And then the white color khasina is available, and then you are able to achieve the first, second, third, or even to the Arupa Jhana. Similarly, the external white khasina also possible. Probably you are looking at a khasina kind of a how to say, as in a mandala, a kind of a image which is physically prepared and it is hanging in front of you. You are again and again looking at it, and now the kasina is available, and now you can simply close your eyes. It is visible inside the mind. Now you are using that to expand the mind to attain the jhana. So both are possible, internally or externally. One can use a color or even the other four patavi, apo, tejo, vayo, kasina. So those material kasinas are also there. So likewise, kasina meditation basically can be achieved through internally or externally, taking the signs internally or externally. So this is what mentioned here. That's the first part. And then second one, ajjattang arupa sanyi bahiddha rupani passati. So that means without taking the sign from internally, so one is attaining externally, looking at the external object, and you pick the color, or you simply use the color kasina, or you are simply using the elements kasina, and that is where you are developing the sort of preliminary activities. So first you have to look at it. Again and again, you have to pay attention to it, keep it there for a long time, and then your mind fairly attuned to that. Now you can maybe even close your eyes. It is visible inside the mind, and we call it as the preliminary sign or learning sign, and it will then develop to the counterpart sign. So here we are talking of the Samatha meditation, and then one can attain jhana. So only there it is used for the external side. He hasn't used the internal. Now he has used only the external. So this is the second way that one can sort of release the mind, open the mind. Then the third one, this subhanteva adhimutto hoti. So basically taking the mind to a very pleasant abiding using the appamana, using that limitless type of Brahma viharas. You know, metta, mudita, karuna, upekkha. So those are actually allowing the mind to completely expand, and ultimately it become completely open, completely freed, based on this sort of Brahma vihara meditation. Say, for example, if you are practicing metta meditation, probably you start with yourself, and then you are taking another person. You are doing that. So likewise, you improve your practice, and then ultimately, to all living beings, you can expand metta, spread metta, and to one direction you can spread metta, to another direction you can spread metta, to another direction you can spread metta. So likewise, to all the directions now you can spread metta. So once you reach that, so that means there is no limit. From the type of the beings, you can cover every being now. And from the directions, you can cover all the directions. Now, mind simply emanates the loving kindness through to the whole universe. There is no limit to the mind. So mind has completely opened up, and it has attained the Chetovimutti, Metta Chetovimutti. So this is the way that mind can be very much like liberated, temporarily opened, completely freed, true loving kindness. Similarly, one can do it through the compassion, karuna, altruistic joy, mudita, or equanimity, upekkha. So this is how the third way one can temporarily liberate the mind. Then one can achieve the akasananchayatana by not paying any attention to the physical objects. Instead, one's paying attention to the unlimited space. And space is infinite. There is no limit to the space, and again you are conditioning the mind, telling the mind the space is unlimited, space is infinite, and this is the Arupa Jhana. One has to start with kasina to come to the Arupa Jhana, and there you are again opening the mind, and now there are no any material phenomena. Rather, the mind has become associating immaterial phenomena, Arupa. So the mind is open. It's called the infinite space, akasananchayatana. That's the fourth one. The fifth one is vijnananchayatana. So now one is abandoning the infinite space. Instead, once paying attention to the infinite consciousness. So the infinite space was perceived by the infinite consciousness. So the consciousness also has to be infinite. That is what, how one is convincing one's mind to achieve the infinite consciousness, vijnanam chayatana. So that is the fifth kind of emancipation. And then Buddha explains akinchanyayatana, where one given up the infinite consciousness, and then he is entering, telling the condition in the mind, there is nothing there. There is nothing available, nothing material, nothing immaterial. So very much like condition in the mind, telling it's nothing is there, nothingness. Akinchanyayatana. And then last one would achieve the nevasanyanasanyayatana, where there is no perception and no neither perception. No non-perception. So that is the seventh opening up of the mind. Then the last one, according to this sutta, is the sanya vedaita nirodha. So giving up the nevasanya nasanyayatana, one dwells in the cessation of perception and feeling. Cessation of perception and feeling. So this is only possible for either non-returners or to the arahants. And again, they have to master the jhanas, and on such person can achieve this number 8. So these are what is called the vimokkha, atta vimokkha. And Buddha here mentioned in this Sacchikaraniya Sutta, you can only realize it by the body. So basically, you are using the body to either extract the kasina or to feel it. And ultimately, there's a complete openness of the mind. And it is basically called as realized by the body. I can't understand why the term body mentioned here. We'll look into that. And then the second one is called Satya Sachikaraniya. Katameja Bhikkhave Dhamma Satya Sachikaraniya. So what are the things to be realized by the memory? So here Sati has taken that as the memory. So this is Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. And Pubbe Nivaso Bhikkhave Satya Sachikaraniya. So Buddha mentioned Pubbe Nivasa Anusati. So reflecting one's past abodes, past lives. So this is only possible through the Pubbe Nivasa Anusati Jnana. So this is particularly related to the memory, particularly related to the mindfulness. So that is also not an easy thing. One has to master the jhana, and then only it is possible. And one is reflecting back one past lives, two past lives, three past lives, so likewise. And one may be able to achieve that. So that is the thing possible to achieve through the sati, mindfulness. And it is related to the memory also. And then Kathameja Bhikkhave Dhamma Chakkuna Satchikaraniya. So what are the things to be realized by the eye? The passing away and rebirth of beings, that is Chutupapata Jnana, realizing by the eye. So it is not the mundane eye, rather here one has to further develop the jhana and master what this called the Chutupapata Jnana, Dibba Chakku. And actually what we want to discuss is the last one. Kathameja Bhikkhave Dhamma Panyaya Satchikaraniya. So what are the things to be realized by the wisdom? Asavakkhayang Asavanang Khayo Bhikkhave Panyaya Satchikaraniya. So there Buddha mentioned the destruction of the taints is to be realized by wisdom. There is no other way to know whether the taints are completely abandoned, completely destroyed. So there is no any other way to know except the one's own wisdom. So if Buddha was there, probably we can get his help, we can ask from him, but now no one is there. So one has to know by one's wisdom. So here actually we can find out some support from other suttas how one would know. So what is this knowledge? So what is this understanding that Buddha is talking here? And some information is available in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 121. So there Buddha explains about the Animitta, the signless meditation. Assume that you are developing Satipatthana, and then you are able to develop fair amount of mindfulness, fair amount of concentration, and then suppose that you are able to pay attention to various phenomena, say various bodily phenomena. So different kinds of hardness arise, softness arise, roughness, smoothness, lightness, heaviness, heat, cold, movements, vibrations. So all different phenomena you are able to recognize. So as you continue your practice, so you are fairly comprehensively knowing these element characteristics. And later, as you continue your practice, probably all these start changing, and they are showing their kind of common characteristics. They are all subjected to arising, changing, passing away. And further you know that, further you develop that, so these phenomena are very quickly arising and passing away, quickly arising and passing away. Now you can't label them. Now you can't distinctly know whether they are Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayo. You can't know because they are quickly arising and passing away. You can't take the nimittas. You can't take the signs. It's very much like a flux. So when this happens, basically a kind of a dispassion arises in the mind, disenchantment arises in the mind. So ultimately mind gives up, and ultimately mind liberates from this all phenomena, and what we call as the animitta. There are no signs. So the mind is unable to capture the signs because they are so quickly arising and passing away, changing, transient, impermanent. So the mind ultimately releases everything, and one would achieve the animitta. So this has to be then developed. So one has to arrive there again and again, arrive that again and again, and spend time there as long as possible. Say 1 minute you are there, 5 minutes you are there, 10 minutes you are there. So likewise, as you continue there, but mind again go and catch the nimittas, catch the signs, and again mind get occupied, again mind start thinking. So you find, okay, this is also conditioned. So there one would understand this signless concentration of mind also conditioned and volitionally produced. So this is an important phenomena, an important point. So you have to achieve the animitta. You have to do certain preliminary activities to arrive there. Once you arrive there, you can spend some time, but again it collapses. You can't maintain it forever. So this is also condition. So how it become impermanent? That is because again capturing the signs, again mind get into some sort of an association, some sort of an engagement, some sort of a grasping. So that is the cause. Now you can easily see this grasping now, because you were in a signless, very pure conscious state. But whenever the mind shifts to some object and tries to pick the signs, recognize its various characteristics, so this process, this activity, probably one can easily pick it. So there he understands the desire, how again the mind occupies with some desires. It may be kama asava. So that means a desire for some sensual phenomena, a sensual desire. Say for example, you are on your walking path, trying to keep your mind at the animitta state, but there is a beautiful flower there. So you start recognizing it, you start trying to find its shape, you want to figure out what are the other phenomena, other characteristics. You get closer and start touching it. So now you are with nimittas, now you are back in the science. No more it the animitta. So how it has happened? Now there is a desire. So you get attached to that flower. There is a desire. So you are able to recognize that desire as a sensual desire, and slowly, if you are able to keep it aside, then rather than promoting that desire, slowly we are able to abandon that desire. So you have seen it, you have noticed it through the wisdom, and then you are not promoting it, you are not being a slave to it, you are not implementing it, simply keeping it aside. So likewise, the desires are to be recognized and abandoned. So here we are talking of the dukkha samudaya, ariya satchang pahatabba. So you have to abandon the cause of suffering, you have to abandon the craving, different kinds of desires. When they are arising in the mind, one has to notice them carefully. Rather than being slave to it, we have to carefully keep it aside. So likewise, if we are promoting such practice, slowly mind reduces its captivity, reduces its sort of grasping desires, and it can then abandon the kamasava. When he knows and sees thus, his mind is liberated from the taint of sensual desire, from the taint of being, and from the taint of ignorance. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge, it is liberated. Now here Buddha explains, so whenever sensual desires are there, whenever kamasava is there, the sensual desire, the taint of sensual desire, kamasava is there, again and again mind get occupied with those sensuality related objects. Say for example, you are now going to buy a new car. Say your old car is not good enough, easily getting to breakdowns, so you want to buy a new car. Now you are going to various places, assessing this and that, you are going through the internet and you are talking to your friends, various brokers. So you are doing some research on it. Now once you are relaxing, so what are the images coming to your mind? Maybe about various cars. What are the thoughts coming to your mind? Maybe about this activity. So how you are going to do it? Are you going to spend the whole money, or are you going to lease it? So this purchase related, car related information are again and again popping your mind, and it's kind of a torture. So it's basically occupying the mind, torturing the mind. So sensuality related torturing is there. Suppose you are in love with someone. So again and again your mind get occupied with that person. So his characteristics, his images, his behavior. So what he has done, what he's going to do, and what you expect him to do or expect her to do. So all sorts of sensuality related thoughts. So this is what actually our minds are talking, minds are thinking. So this sensuality related thoughts, sensuality related signs, again and again filling the mind, occupying the mind. So all because of this kamasava. But the more we practice vipassana, more we practice kayanupassana, vedanupassana, cittanupassana, dhammanupassana, this process has to be fairly calmed down, fairly reduced. Now we should be able to keep the mind free from sensuality related thoughts, sensuality related images, signs that indicate some sort of a relaxation, some sort of a release. The torture, tormenting coming through the taint of sensual desire is little reduced. Now think of a situation that the taint of sensual desire is completely abandoned. Then the mind should not go through any kind of a torturing coming through any of these sensuality related objects. So there Buddha mentioned in the Chulasunyata Sutta, he understands thus, whatever disturbances there might be dependent on the taint of sensual desire, those are not present here. So now he reflects his mind. He again and again, he often reflects his mind
there he can't find any such sensuality related disturbances. His mind is not asking this and that, not requesting this and that. I want to associate him, I want to associate her, I want to look at this picture, I want to look at this film, I want to listen to this particular music. So various requests are there typically in the mind. So those are basically abandoned. Mind like to relax, mind like to pay sort of calm, spend kind of in seclusion. It prefers that seclusion. There are no more demands. And while there, again, it is simply maintaining its purity, maintaining its clarity, and that indicates that torture is not available. So similarly, the taint of being, so our various desires are there, so rather than allowing us to be satisfied in the present moment. So we have various desires. If I have that, I'll be happy. If I am able to fulfill that, I'll be happy. If I am able to have, say, promotion, I'll be happy. If I want to become a doctor, I'll be happy. If I want to become an arahant, I'll be happy. So all that, either sensuality related desires, either your position related desires, your achievement related desires, your career related desires, or your even spiritual desires. So all are actually drifting us from the present moment completeness, fulfillment. So at this, the present moment, you are unhappy. Present moment, you feel unfulfilled. You feel a little restless. You feel a little agitated because you feel you are not fulfilled. You have something lacking. So this is the operation of the, what we call the taint of being, bhavasava, operating in the mind. So always it want to look for something else, to become something else, to become someone, so that bhava tanha is fairly operative, and it always asks to further continue. Okay, I want to live further, I want to become a god or this and that, I want to progress, I want to become this, I want to become that. Present moment, there is some sort of an unsatisfaction. It's again a type of a torture. So you are always restless, you always, the mind become agitated, not feeling contented. This is a kind of a torture, what we call the taint of being. Now, as we continue the practice, this also has to be reduced. So without asking anything, without demanding anything, so you are utterly happy in the present moment. No desires, no expectations. So there are the probably you can remember the appanihita vimokka, the emancipation through desireless, emancipation through aimless, wishless. You are not wishing anything more, you are not expecting anything more, not desiring anything more. So the mind is released from all the desires, happy in the present moment. Everything fulfilled, everything accomplished, nothing more to have, something like that. So if that is there, that torturing is not there. No demands, no request, no inner agitation, no anticipations. So completely fulfilled. So that indicates the abandoning of this taint of being. Whatever disturbance there might be dependent on the taint of being, those are not present here. So Buddha says, so when the yogi is reflecting one's mind, so he's feeling contented. He's not asking this and that. Feeling relaxed, feeling enough, something like that. Then the taint of ignorance. So I am here, you are there. I am better than you. I am equal to you. I am poorer than you. I am inferior to you. So various kinds of comparisons are there because there is a person here, and on the outside also there are people, there are individuals. So all those measurements, all those kind of comparisons we do as a result of the ignorance, and basically the ignorance of having a self. thinking there is an individual, thinking there is a person, thinking there is a self. And the mind also becomes restless. There is no proper aim. So the moha, the ignorance, is basically available everywhere. When you are desiring something, again, ignorance is there. When you hate something, again, there's ignorance is there. And on top of that, whenever we feel a sense of I, ignorance is there. Any kind of agitation happening because of comparison, I am good, I am bad, I am similar, I am not enough, I am not enough, I am not good. So you are here, you are as an individual, as a person, and you are not good enough. You feel unhappy. So all those comparison related, conceit related, and measurement related, and you being a person always with some, say, lack of something, you are being a person but you are not a superman, you are getting old, you are getting sick, so this body is also not perfect, your mind is also not perfect. So you are, whenever we have that sense of a person, kind of a personality, so that personality is not something perfect. There are always some shortcomings. Always create some sort of an unhappiness by seeing those shortcomings. And so basically, that is the ignorance. So we consider this whole thing as a person. The body and the mind are operating in a kind of a way, but we attribute a person to this whole process. So this person is not a perfect person. So you feel unhappy. So this is again a kind of a torturing to the mind, an unsatisfaction to the mind, a disturbance to the mind. So particularly happening because of this underneath taint of ignorance. Now what happens if the ignorance is not there? So according to Buddha here, whatever disturbances there might be depending on the taint of ignorance, those are not present here. So there is no one to protect. There is nothing to achieve. No one to sort of succeed. No person to safeguard. You are simply following, simply maintaining. And so kind of a situation. So this amount of disturbance, namely the connected with the six base. Now when Buddha mentioned this part, the whole thing in the Chulasunyata Sutta, he is adding another beautiful part. Now you know that the disturbances coming through the taint of sensual desire is not there. Disturbances coming from the taint of being is not there. Disturbances coming from the taint of ignorance is also not there. But still little bit of disturbance is there because of the senses. That's also a very interesting point, because sometimes people are expecting a kind of a freezing type of a situation, kind of a hibernation type of a situation. You can't feel anything, you can't sense anything, there shouldn't be any kind of a conscious activity. So you are expecting complete unconscious type of a freezed state. But here Buddha particularly mentioned there is present only this amount of disturbance, namely that connected with the six bases that are dependent on this body and conditioned by life. So your eyes are open, so there may be little disturbance. Probably you hear certain noise, say babies are crying, dogs are barking, and the people are chattering. Certain noise is there, some disturbance. And maybe a bad smell is coming, a little disturbance. Maybe you are drinking some medicine, some disturbance. You are going through some pain, bodily disturbance. So these senses are still operative. Six sense bases are there, so they are in action. Basically, when they are there, there is an inevitable friction coming from that. But the mind is not occupied with sensual desire or any that desire to become or any desire to get rid of. So the old tanha are abandoned, mind remains calm, clear, clarity, But some disturbance because of the body is there. Because body is living. Body is a conditioned phenomena. So this conditioned phenomena is going through some kind of repairs and disturbances and say pains, aches, all are there. So that is there. So as we can see from this sutta, even one becomes an arahant by abandoning all the taints, asavas, still there's a pain coming through the body. Probably here Buddha is not talking about the arahattapala samadhi, probably, or the nirodha samapatti. There probably one may not be able to feel anything because you have absorbed something. But here in this Chulasunyata Sutta, Buddha is giving a very realistic kind of an explanation. So you are not being tormented by the taints, but because of you are having a body, still a living body, a conditioned body, impermanent body, so it is producing some sort of a friction, some sort of a agitation, disturbance, it is there. Now, further he explains, this field of perception is void of the taint of sensual desire. This field of perception is void of the taint of being. This field of perception is void of the taint of ignorance. Now when you are looking at the point of the perceptions, so the mind get occupied by the perceptions, occupied by various signs about your children, about your country, about your president, about your relatives, about your achievements, about your wealth. So all are producing some sort of a signs in the mind. Now they are more and more when the sensual desire is there, the taint of sensual desire is there, when the taint of sensual, the being is there, the taint of ignorance is there. But when they are not there, that means mind's clarity is intact. So the mind become more spacious, purity is available, it's not being occupied with all these different signs, characteristics. And one is, so Buddha mentioned here, so you are able to maintain the mind with its purity. So it's a kind of a, so this is the way that the reflections to do again and again, and then we can get a fair assessment whether the asavas are at least reduced, whether their impact is reduced. Suppose that you often take your mind to some sensual desires, you are burning with lust, again and again the mind filled with lot of requests, going through various thinking, proliferation, so that indicates all three taints are widely available, strongly available. But there may be instances that the desires are subsided as a result of the samadhi. So till the samadhi power is available, concentration power is available, you are not being tormented by these problems, these issues. But the moment the samadhi become weaker, again this torturing start happening. Suppose one is able to abandon certain fetters for the good, completely abandon, then those related torturing should not happen. So we have to reflect, we have to see whether these things are again and again popping up. Now the issue is sometimes we are able to cut off certain defilements, abandon certain defilements, and for some time we are able to keep the mind free from those defilements so that the torturing happening because of them is not available. But unfortunately, again there may be sort of triggering and again those desires can happen. So whatever defeated defilements might appear again. That is where we get defeated. Previously defilements were defeated, but those weakened, defeated defilements again appear in the mind, so we get defeated. So only when those defilements are completely uprooted, then only we can see, okay, they are not there. So that's why Buddha particularly mentioned to the monks particularly, that just having a seclusion, just having your monkhood and living alone and able to maintain good seed, and even having a fair amount of good samadhi, don't just be happy if you are still having taints. Because whatever the happiness, whatever the calmness, relaxation experience can be disturbed again because the latent tendencies are still operative in the mind. They are not visible at the moment, but there is a possibility they are to arise. Asavas are not operative, but there's a possibility for them to arise. So therefore, Buddha only basically praised the ability or the achievement of complete eradication of defilements, complete eradication of taints. So in this sutta, so Buddha mentioned, so one has to realize true wisdom by careful analysis, careful investigation, whether the taints are completely destroyed. So one has to do it honestly. One has to do it in an impartial way to see whether defilements are there, to see whether torturing of those are there, any taints are there, the taints are operative, the taints related signs, thoughts are appearing in the mind or not. So it's a kind of a very fair assessment that we have to do. So according to this sutta, so this is the way one can see whether the mind has become purified. Okay, with that note, I will conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions. Yeah, go ahead.
Excuse me, Bhante.
Yeah, we have a question from our side.
Thank you for your teaching. I think one of the best teachings you gave was when I knocked your cell phone off onto the floor and you just kept teaching. Without really
ignoring completely.
Not disturbed at all. And I wanted to... sorry about that. I guess the thing that comes to mind for me in this teaching is we can easily think that we're free of taints, especially if we're like many of us probably when we're doing the sort of practice we're seeking seclusion, you know, because if we're doing meditation, then we're secluded from people and situations that cause us to get aroused in various ways. And so I guess it's very helpful. I think of the book Meditate Without Meditating, and I was reading a little bit of it, that this teacher suggest people don't meditate, and for her retreats she has people just working together, so and noticing how the mind reacts to situations.
Correct.
And just noticing the mind and being aware of the mind. So but I just think it's so important to have a teacher, because often I think it's easy to think that our taints are, you know,
abandoned. We can easily overestimate ourselves.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the situation hasn't happened for a long time. There is no reason to be angry. So I might feel, okay, there is no anger anymore in the mind.
Yeah.
And there are no any, say, sensuality related objects. I am not going to parties and this and that. So the lust desires are not arising. I can easily might assume, okay, there is no lust in the mind. So likewise, that's why the mere seclusion from the others, kind of cutting off from the, say, associations, can't assure whether the mind is completely abandoned them, or they are subsided, suppressed for the moment.
Yes. And then, I guess in other ways as well, I was at Panditarama for 5 months, and they kept speaking of how if the mind is sort of deluded, there's, if you're trying to observe objects clearly, that mm-hmm. there's just a blur.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think that's what they were saying. The mind is not penetrating to the object. Mindfulness isn't penetrating.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be mindfulness has to become sharp so that there's, otherwise there's sort of a blur.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what they were saying. So I was noticing in your teaching there, you're talking about, you know, when the mind becomes uninterested
mm-hmm.
in objects and it becomes, the mind becomes sort of dispassionate about seeing phenomena,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a you're seeing a flux
exactly.
rather, like a quickly changing experience of phenomena that
mm-hmm.
you can't really label.
Exactly.
That's interesting. I wonder, you know, if people get confused at that point also and
mm-hmm.
think maybe it's the blur where they're not, mindfulness isn't strong enough. But
now these are two areas actually. One area is, as you said, as mentioned in the Panditarama, where the mindfulness has become somewhat muddled,
yeah,
not sharp,
yeah.
So you can't clearly see the phenomena.
Yeah.
So they appear like blurred because your focus is not correct. So
yeah.
Assume that you are using a camera, but if your focusing is not correct, so the objects appear blurred. So your apparatus
yeah.
has some issues. Concentration has some issues. Mindfulness has some issues. The way you are looking at it has some issues. So all that because of that.
Yeah.
So this is one situation.
Mm-hmm.
But suppose that you are able to clearly see the phenomena.
Yeah.
So you are continuing to see it.
Yeah.
And so the phenomena are changing and you recognize this change,
yeah.
and they are completely arising and passing away, arising and passing away. So you are continuing your practice properly, correctly, and
yeah.
your mindfulness is very, very good. Concentration is also very good. And as a result of that, the phenomena are also properly able to see.
Yeah.
But now you are seeing their true nature. And as you continue the practice, now again they become blurred. The phenomena start appearing blurred.
Yeah.
That is not because of the reduction of the mindfulness or the concentration.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, now they have become kind of a flux.
Yeah.
Now their impermanence, their uncertainty or transience becomes so vulnerable type,
yeah.
and so quick. So
mm-hmm.
you can't see the details now.
Yeah.
You can't see what they are. You can't label them. So this is what we can simply say, now they have become a flux.
Yeah.
Not because your faculties are sort of disturbed or reduced or weakened, rather because the phenomena are rapidly changing.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So this, I mean, when it happens, then you become more and more dispassionate. You
yeah.
start distancing from the object. You are starting kind of dispassionate about the process. Ultimately, it will give up the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one more instance also that they said at Panditarama is if the mind is trying too hard to focus, then
mm.
the mind sort of
reflects
off the object, sort of bounces off.
Can be.
And I think I've noticed that early on when I was doing insight meditation, probably trying too hard, which
mm-hmm.
is some people tend to be like overexerting,
exactly.
trying hard.
Mm. Actually, that overexertion also can cause the restlessness. So mind become agitated, mind become restless because you are too hard.
Yeah.
You are trying too hard. You are putting too much effort.
Yeah.
So as a result of that, mind can become restlessness, get into restlessness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but in the case of when the mind actually does become mindful, it's sort of a natural experience of things.
Correct.
Sort of a unity of your experience in your mind and your body,
mm-hmm.
To where it doesn't take any effort. It doesn't
exactly.
seem, it's just completely
exactly. so
natural.
You are able to properly balance the faculties.
Yeah.
So faculties are well balanced and phenomena are also properly visible. And you are able to continue without much struggle because everything is in proper balance.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. And the last week's teaching, I wonder, can I ask a question
mm-hmm.
about the
yeah.
Bhojanga
mm-hmm.
Samyutta? It's 46.4 called clothes.
Uh-huh.
And it's the simile of being able to put on different, use different enlightenment
factors
at will. Mm-hmm. And the Bhikkhu Bodhi points out that there is, in the Sutta, the elders, the Sariputta's enlightenment factors are discussed, Palabodhanga, for when he enters fruition attainment after having made an enlightenment factor of mindfulness the key, the other six enlightenment factors follow along, and so for the others. So if he wants to make energy the key, he could do that, and the other enlightenment factors follow.
Mm-hmm.
Thus he spoke this sutta to show his mastery over the fruition attainment enlightenment factors. Do you know about that? I couldn't find anything else about that.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. Not, it was last time actually we simply discussed, So Venerable Sariputta here being an arahant, so he has some exceptional capacity to, you know, adjust them.
Yeah.
I mean, when we are doing, we are even, I mean, trying to be smart and we prepare ourselves, and then unnecessarily we are disturbing.
Yeah.
But he being the arahant, he doesn't have such kind of a ignorant desire. But he may be doing certain adjustments when it is necessary, as you mentioned, maybe while in the fruition, maybe the fruition attainment.
Is that a jhanic attainment?
No. I mean,
that's
jhana,
just...
jhana and the fruition attainments are typically different. You know, you know, that sotapatti phala, say, sakadagami phala samapatti. So, sotapatti phala samapatti is a completely magga phala related attainment.
Okay.
So jhanas are maybe available even to the mundane people.
Yes.
Say the it is a laukika one. It's a mundane type of one.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
And so it seems as though they're saying for, and I, Dhammajiva Bhante said something yesterday that was in line with this, that the mindfulness enlightenment factor has different levels.
Mm.
So if you're Sakadagami, that enlightenment factor would be at a certain
level,
different level.
Mm.
So maybe it is that, related to that, that our enlightenment factors are different at different levels?
Yes, you know, the thing is, enlightenment factors are evolving, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, say, for example, sati, the mindfulness, so that when we are beginning it, it is not... kind of stable, and we are purposely producing it, we are purposely paying our attention to phenomena. So likewise, the mindfulness is not yet established, stable.
Yeah.
But later, as a result of our practice, become now stable, but still you are having some effort to maintain it. That's another level. And assume that you are able to achieve some vipassana, and now you are able to maintain the mind without any attachment, at least for some time. There the mindfulness is still available, but effortless.
Yeah,
it has become very much like inherent characteristic.
Okay, yeah.
So you don't need to purposely maintain mindfulness.
Yeah.
So it is remaining in the present by itself.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to go to the shift to the past or the future.
Mm.
I mean, being in the present has become its default nature.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, because the enlightenment factors, they're having to do with our mind's attainment to the path or the fruits of attainment.
Correct.
So, yeah.
So I feel, therefore, definitely the enlightenment factors are evolving factors.
Yes.
So we may starting with some very basic kind of, unstable type of level, but slowly, slowly, as a result of the practice, they become stable, available, and ultimately they become kind of naturally available type of thing.
Yeah, and so for Sariputta, he could just choose anyone because of his attainment. He was
fulfilled.
an arahant,
and fulfilled, and exceptional person also, not a typical arahant, but some exceptional, say, caliber is there with him.
Yeah.
So he may have certain mastery of that.
Okay.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
So those are the questions from our side, Jennifer.
I can't hear you well today, Jennifer. Can you increase your volume?
Is this better?
A little, okay? Little, yeah, somewhat okay now. Maybe it's my fault. Maybe. okay. Now I am good. Okay. I didn't change
okay,
my
great.
some point. So that was the issue. Now it's fine.
Okay. I can hear an echo in the background. But
I see.
That's
I see.
Okay. Disturbing you.
Okay. So you haven't received any questions today, right?
So I actually have a question from last week. We had ended it and then I received the question afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, Bhante, Venerable Bhante, at the end of a meditation session, should the thoughts and process be remembered clearly? What does it mean if I don't have a clear memory of the activities?
Mm-hmm. So there may be a situation, actually one thing is that you fall asleep, so you can't remember anything. But on the other hand, there may be a situation which is a more positive situation, where our mind starts dropping things, it doesn't want to store things, it doesn't want to memorize things, rather it keeps dropping things. And so if you went through the point properly and you are fully awake, are very sharp, but mind hasn't stored anything, this is also possible. So therefore I think the scenario what you are talking may be very similar to this, where you are fully aware of what's going on at the present moment, but once you finish your session you can't remember much because mind didn't wanted to store anything. So such thing is possible, by the way.
Is that a positive sign?
I feel it's a positive. Because I mean, because as we continue, mind doesn't want to store much. Only volitionally, when we are telling it, okay, I want to memorize it or something, then maybe it likes to store. But otherwise, it like to be, you know, relaxed. No need of burdening it. It doesn't want to get burdened. So that's such kind of a property is developing in the mind. Now previously we are accumulating things, even garbage we take it and fill the mind. Now mind doesn't want to. It understood.
I have that feeling. It happens very often to me. I do not remember anything about the meditation, but I'm aware that I was completely awake. Definitely. But it's really like not necessary to keep this memory.
Exactly.
At the beginning of the meditation, long time ago, I was very keen on remembering because I wanted to know what was going on in this meditation, but now it's not of importance anymore.
Exactly. That's the point. So that's why I think the mind doesn't want to get bothered, doesn't want to get burdened, and he understood the storing is not unnecessary on some cases, and for some typical living we can manage, but unnecessarily no need to burden the mind.
For me personally, if I may say that, I found out that memory, especially for me, is a very strong source of suffering. Memories, it's connected to a kind of sorrow very often. And I feel it's a progress if I do not remember.
Correct.
I am not so much stressed on remembering anymore.
Exactly.
It's like it's feeling like a freedom.
And the other thing is, now memory is causing for us to have a sense of I. Because when I have my past memories, it helps me to connect all different incidents. So that giving the perception, okay, I was there. I am the one who went through that. I am the one who went through that experience. So the memories are helping us to create, link all those episodes, those little stories, and showing me I am a person. I am an individual. I have this past. So I am so and so.
Yeah.
So like that.
Yeah.
So when the mind does not take those and completely ignore, I mean, you are in the present, isn't it?
So memory plays a big role in creating a self.
Yeah, and it's a very common saying also that you are what you wear.
You are.
That you are what you have gone through.
Mm.
Nowadays you are because you have done all this in your life. But
correct.
Nowadays I see it completely different.
Mm.
Yeah, that you are what you are now and
correct.
Not because of your past.
Past. Mm. You have a kind of a choice now. What
yes.
to do next maybe even. Right. Currently you are doing the proper thing, then it, that decides who you are then.
Which can be the next trouble.
Okay, Jennifer.
Great, thank you, Bente. And we have a question from Geshan. And by the way, Geshan will be our host for the next 2 weeks.
Right.
Just a heads up.
So are you going for a retreat?
I am going to a retreat, but also he is looking forward. We're going to rotate from month to month.
Uh-huh.
Him a coordinator and me a coordinator. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Hello,
Geshan.
Yep. Hello. Thank you for introducing as well. And Dhruvan Sarunai Bante, I hope you can hear me.
Yes. Yes.
So today's discussion, we talked about the body sort of break into eight
emancipations,
and then we talked about the mind and the memory. I think the question comes within that for me, and then there is the I and the wisdom, so that. So let me ask the question on the mind and the memory, and then you mentioned about sati, and I just put a small note here and said it's the memory. And my understanding was sati is something different than the memory, and
yes.
is it just the memory? So I just want to realign myself with what is right.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the mindfulness, the sati, has certain characteristics of memory as well, but we can't limit it to memory. So one aspect of mindfulness, is the memory. So as we are developing it, now that's why in the typically when one reaches the faculty of mindfulness, it is mentioned chirakatampi, chirabhasitampi, sarita, anusarita. So whatever the activities that you did long time ago, whatever the speech that you made long time ago, still you can remember like you did it today. So very such kind of a strong memory is there when the mindfulness comes to the faculty. But the interesting thing is now when you start developing vipassana, so mind keeps dropping things rather than attaching to things. Now, as we just discussed, it doesn't want to memorize now. So things are going little opposite way. So therefore, we can't say every time. So the mindfulness, when you are developing, it become more and more memorizing many, many things. Becomes even to the level that you burden of being too much memory. Rather, opposite starts happening because the understanding, the wisdom, keeps dropping things. It doesn't want to attach to anything, doesn't want to take more science because science become the issue. So mind doesn't want to get interested about the science. Without science, you can't develop memory. So that as when you are developing the signless, so that means you can't have a memory because in order to have memory, you need some information, you need some detail, you need some science, but now science are not available. So you can't memorize them. So likewise, the certain factors become little operative in opposite direction. But anyway, in the Pubbenivasana Sajnana, so kind of a, it's memory related activity. Now you are paying more attention. So it is kind of a special type of a memory according to the Dhamma, where not only your present life, but you are taking your capacity even to the past lives.
Be able to recall the past life as well. Is that accurate?
Yeah, but the thing is, it is, I mean, we can't do it by simple activity. I mean, you have to master jhana, and you have to achieve what you call abhinya, and all these are, you know, very, very difficult tasks.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So my question, you know, like I think I got the answers that it's just the sati is the memory, but it is not.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bit more than that.
Exactly.
What I'm thinking.
Correct. Yes.
And wisdom. So we also sort of talk about that wisdom is that the on that itself, I wasn't with the eye and the wisdom. That's what you said. And, is it the consciousness? Are we talking about? Or? So I'm still talking about the segregation of to hear the sutta, and you were talking about the body and the body breaking into eight, and the mind and the memory, and then the eye. And then with the wisdom,
those
are the kind of things.
So that's why I mean,
my question.
So it's a kind of a way of naming them. So basically, in the Atta Vimokka, the eight emancipations, they attributed it to the kaya, the body. So the Pubbe Nivasa Anusati Jnana, the reflection of the past lives, he has particularly attributed it to the sati. And then the reflecting about others, say, abidings, the rebirth of the beings, he attributed it to the I. So it doesn't mean that...
Wisdom I.
Here is a kind of a, say, psychic power, actually. So chakku is what you call the... Chutupapata Dibba Chakku, divine eye. It's typically called as divine eye. Divine eye. Yeah.
So that's different than the wisdom.
Yeah, this is not the typical, it is not the mundane, you know, the typical eye. Here we are talking of the divine eye.
I think yes. Now it makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that is all what I had, and
right.
I really like the sutra as well. Which I haven't heard before, I think. So this is good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante, and Teruvan Saranai.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai.
Alright, thank you, Bhante. I believe that's the last question for
okay,
today.
Okay, fine. So then we'll wind up the session. So today also we have spent a fair amount of time. Okay, there's a question coming to me. Teruvan Saranai Bhante, when we observe in-breath and out-breath, then the gaps become larger with emptiness, where we feel these external kind of disturbances with thoughts, sounds and maybe bodily feelings, etc. Does this mean we are into the Arupa Loka state, or is it the beginning of Vipassana? Actually, we can't say we are in the Arupa state. Here we are very much like the absence of material. So what we call as the Akasa Dhatu, the gap between the material phenomena is available to us, accessible to us, and to some extent we can say they are the absence of the materiality, somewhat in parallel with the Arupa, Akasa. But the Akasa Nanchayatana particularly means that it is pervading. It is you are able to be there for a long time, no material phenomena at all, and it is completely boundless, and you are absorbed to that. And here actually the phenomena are there, two breaths are there, in between breaths there's a little gap, and you experience that space, and it is not... We can't say this is the Akasa Nanchayatana, but certain attributes of space is there. Yeah. And then there's another question asking, also at time to time we feel something is going inside this emptiness, grabbing and creating things automatically, kind of a flux as well. time to time we feel something is going inside this emptiness. Yeah, because the emptiness is not yet perfected. So it's a kind of a still vulnerable, some phenomena coming and going still. So you can't still achieve the pure steady type of emptiness. That's why even in the today we just discussed, when one is achieving the animitta, it is also not stable, it's also impermanent, it's also conditioned. Again mind go and picks the phenomena, again mind go and picks the signs. So the signless is not available when mind is picking the signs. So signless state also become impermanent. Similarly, the emptiness also become impermanent because mind get occupied with certain information. So likewise, so when we achieve it at the beginning, so all these states are impermanent because still the defilements are torturing, still defilements are present. Their impact is still available. So we have to abandon the defilements. Then we can say, okay, we are in the imperturbable type of release. What we call as the akuppa cheto imutti. So all these previous cheto imutti are still impermanent. But the akuppa cheto imutti, arahatta pala samadhi, is the best form that is only limited to the arahants. Animitta does not mean the beginning of the vipassana. It is some amount of achievement, we can say. Because beginning of vipassana, we can simply say you are recognizing different phenomena. Say if you are talking of assume that you are practicing vedanupassana. Now you are able to clearly see different vedana, different feelings. So knowing the characteristics. And then assume that you are practicing dhatu manasikara. There you are able to see the element characteristics properly. So likewise, I would like to say the beginning of vipassana happens there, where you are distinctly start recognizing the phenomena. And then you are, as you are continuing your practice, now you are able to understand their impermanent characteristics, unsatisfactoriness, non-self, all that. So after going through that only, you achieve the animitta. So it's a kind of a milestone that you achieve while you are going through your vipassana practice. Okay, those are the questions I have received to my chat. So I'll conclude from here and we'll share the merits, and I invite Venerable Dhamma Vijitha to do the sharing of merits.
May our relatives and all beings share in the merit produced by today's teaching. May all celestial beings share in the merit produced by today's teaching. And may the celestial beings protect the Dhamma exposition and dispensation of the Buddha and his disciples for a very long time. And perhaps the seeds of Buddha's teaching that have been planted in our hearts and minds may grow, producing path, fruition, and nibbana. I invite you to join in the recitation of the traditional Pali verses for sharing the merits. Thank you for your teaching today, Bhante. Ittavata chamhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe deva namodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata chamhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta namodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata chamhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe satta namodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasakta ca bhummakta deva naga mahiddhika punyang tang anumoditva charang akkantu sasanam. Akasakta ca bhummakta deva naga mahiddhika punyang tang anumoditva charang akkantu desanam. Akasakta ca bhummakta deva naga mahiddhika punyang tang anumoditva charang akkantu mangparang. Idang vo nati nang hotu sukita huntu nateo. Idang vo nati nang hotu sukita huntu nateo. Idang vo nati nang hotu sukita huntu nateo. Imina punyakamina ma me bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana patiya. Imina punyakamina ma me bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana patiya. Imina punya kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo tu yava nibbana patya sadhu sadhu sadhu.
Thank you, Pante.
Teruan sanai. Yeah, teruan sanai.